In fact, they could not complete it in 6 years. It took about 12 years to complete. The main idea was so that we could reduce the expenses, but it built some of the huge resorts, which you can see at Victoria Dam, which is one of the very earliest stage double curvature so-called arch dams, which is producing a huge amount of electricity. And they have really contributed in economic terms. But people have started already complaining that it's very difficult to manage some of them, and there are a lot of problems, and some question about the long-term resilience, and that because it was very new and still it's not stabilized, the communities are still finding how to integrate with these systems. These new irrigation systems also supplement the large ancient irrigation systems, but the small ones were not considered because the cost benefit was considered to be too low. But now there is a growing recognition that these small reservoirs actually have a role to play, and that we need to learn more about them. So I will just make a couple of points. Now, for example, as you know, we make new reservoirs by building a dam across the river, and which leads to a lot of conflict with the downstream people related to the environmental impacts and also the people's life. Now, in the olden time, what they did was we had a river here, they put a half a dam here, and the water was taken from a canal here and then picked up from another canal here, and this has actually supplied this kind of large irrigation systems. So in that way, it has minimized the downstream impacts from the not completed building. Secondly, you can see here an ancient canal. You can see one side there's a bund, but this side is open. So this means the water actually can come from inside the catchment. It's actually collected in the system, and it travels very slowly because it goes along the contours. When it fills, it spills. And at the spilling point, they constructed some reservoirs. Now, if you look at the new systems, you can see this is just few kilometers down of the ancient system. What can you see is that it is protected, so people have no access to that water. And you can see the velocity is very high. The idea is to reduce losses so that you transport very quickly the water. And also, people think that if you reduce the loss, that means reduce the recharge in the groundwater, it is good. But there's question that if you don't lose actually water, but you lost it, it's actually stored in the groundwater, which can also supply downstream. But one thing immediately came was when these were built, to make sure that these are maintained, the farmers started complaining that they cannot access the water, especially the cattle or the buffaloes. The animals need to be fed, and so later it was necessary to break some parts to provide access to animals. So you can see that there has been a quite big difference in the idea. In this kind of systems, we think more like a corporate view. It is also evident from the irrigation systems. Now, in the ancient systems, what they had was they had feeder canals. The water was taken, but you can see that it is again picked up and provided. So there was a lot of recycling in the water. But in the new systems, what we have is a very clear idea of how much water is required to produce rice. So we calculate how much area, how much water is needed. You bring the water provided through these kind of feeder canals to the area. And whatever is not used is picked up as drainage and discharge. So in a sense, we do two things here. One is we neglect the rainfall within the catchment completely. We look at how much is water available from outside, bring it very efficiently and distribute, and remove the excess. But in all the system, the water within that area was very much utilized. But also, this system has the advantage that the water which is polluted, if it is polluted by the agriculture, is drained. But here we have to be careful about the water. We can't pollute it because it's supplying to some other people. So it has to be more regulated, but it provides better use of the resources. And another important thing is this reservoir, as you can see, is open at this end. It was kept open so that people could access the water. People could, not only people, but also animals had access, because this followed from the religious belief that the people don't own land or the resources, and especially the kings are told they are the custodians, or they have to take care of the resources for the future. Now, when you talk about sustainable development, we come to the same conclusion from a different perspective, that we have to make sure the future generations would have the access to resources. In these systems, they have the thinking that you only take care of the resources, the time. And so people had access to the water, and they also made something like the social gathering places. You can see the bathing place is where people gather and exchange information. So it has some social functions. I think where my time is. I think my time is up. So I would. There are some interesting technical things which, if one is interested, we could go into, which we actually plan to do. One is to look at how the access is variability. This map shows the distribution of tanks. Smooth. So each block here is about 950 square kilometers. And then this says when there are more than 800 reservoirs in this block. This means one reservoir for every one square kilometer. And this line is very interesting because it shows the rainfall contour. So we cannot find these reservoirs in the very in the area where it has heavy rainfall, but in the dry zone we can see different densities. And one thing I had a look at was the distribution of these small, very small ones, medium ones, and the big ones. But these are all small scale. 40 to 80 means they supply an area of 40 to 80 hectares. And we can see the numbers. This is the ancient kingdom, and which has a distribution of almost equal size, but the medium size are big. This area is the here, which is bordering the high rainfall area, and they have used number of very small, huge number of small reservoirs there to regulate water. And this distribution of canals is somewhat relevant to the rainfall. These are the number of years, and each year the rainfall variability is shown here. And this part corresponds, you can see the rainfall variability is very high, and these are very dry. So in very dry areas, we have a number of very small, large number of small ones. When the rainfall volume is high and the area extent is high, there's a combination of the large and the small reservoirs. Recently there was a British consultant who came to Sri Lanka to look at some of these ancient irrigation systems. And he said that it might be possible, I mean he made a report that when you think of climate change, you may have to think of this kind of distributed storage where you can store the water for two things. One is to reduce the floods, the other one is to conserve the water. You know that we can forecast the rainfall and the climate change using the global climate models, and then we can use the future expected scenarios. In this particular figure, what I show you here is under the IPCC A2 scenario. A2 means like one of the worst case of scenario at the IPCC 4 report stage, worst case global warming scenario. And under that, what is looked at here is in these two cases here, which shows these graphs are showing near future and far future, how much the rain intensities will increase for a given return period. Return period means if we consider 5 years or 10 years, let's say here 10 years, the maximum rainfall we can expect is here. But in the near future, this must expect here, which means more than what we would expect in 100 years now. So depending on the location, the maximum rainfall could increase very drastically for a given return period. And this has is not constant to every part. At different parts, these increments will be different. And the biggest problem is if we have this kind of extreme rainfalls, it's going to cause floods. And the traditional, the conventional way of reducing flood risk is to improve the flood control infrastructure. This means to create bigger embankments on the rivers or to increase the river sizes, but it costs hugely and may be very difficult. On the other hand, we also know that the dry days would also increase. Not only the high rain intensity would increase, but the length of no rain periods will also increase in the future. Under global warming, what we are expecting is bigger fluctuations, not the total amount, but the distribution will be very concentrated, that is high rain period and low rain period. So such kind of systems may also provide a way to tackle this problem by storing the excess rainfall, reducing the load of floods, and also redistributing. So let me come to the conclusion before that. What you would like to do in this mosaic system is to look at these two different aspects. In the modern systems, they are very high, very efficient, but they are completely devoid of day-to-day life. This is the modern reservoir. People have no access to this. It's very big. You know, you are even afraid to go there. Maybe you can have some boats to go around, but you can see this. The old systems are very much part of the day-to-day life. Secondly, we deal completely independently, the macro and micro in the modern systems. We store water, we transport them, and then somebody else make use of them, decide what happens there. But in this ancient system, there's a good integration of macro and micro. So we have multiple benefits. We have the residence from these distributed systems. If one fails, everything will not fail. So it promotes resilience and sustainability. The modern systems, as I showed you, which was developed in just 12 years, compared to the thousands of years in the past, they are rapid development, very high productivity and very efficient. They are all macro-scale solutions. They are not very much looking at the micro-scale integration to the daily lives, but they have high efficiency and productivity. And we, in the three-year project, we try to understand how we could really bring those strengths of each systems together. So let me conclude that ancient irrigation systems have been perfected over 17th century. So this means a lot of trial and error, a lot of filtering, and we can get many valuable lessons related to sustainability from them. And in addition, the systems actually design the social system that only not managed the operations but supported its innovation, and we need to know how this has happened. Nowadays, we are very much interested in how to do community-based development, but also we are realized that how can we bring the knowledge to each community, which is required at macro scale. So another area probably we could learn from is how the local communities not only manage, but how they can also contribute to the development at the macro scale of the breakthroughs and the school scales and those large scale systems, which probably were supported not entirely by the kings, but also by the society at large. Okay, that's. Thank you very much for that.
我想简单的做一个小结，就是他那个今天提到几个比较重要的概念。首先就是说，在他的引论的时候，他讲了一个 resilience 这个理念嘛，在中文里面可能会叫做展性。他的意思说，就是在我们有一般的理解，就是有我的这个展性，就是说对系统恢复原状的一种能力。但是那个是很基本的一种概念。现在的那个对于展性的认识呢，就是说这个系统呢，在外在的干扰上，它可以改变成另外更有效的系统，所以这个要分清。第二个呢，就是他讲到那个这个斯里兰卡这个状态，作为一个例子来探讨这个 resilience 这个或者叫中文里面叫那个 可持续性这个理念的一个比较，它比较主要比较两种，就现代的和过去的那个古代的这个灌溉系统。古代灌溉系统呢，你可以看到是充分利用这个春泥为基础的这种基于春子的这种小规模的灌溉系统。现在呢，强调一种比较大的。我们现在的这个新的项目去探讨这种如何结合这种小规模的这种灌溉系统和那个大规模的现代的这种灌溉系统。这样呢，就小规模的呢，它那个短期比较好，这种大规模的这个现代系统呢，它得比较强调这个生产力还有有效性，这样的一个有效的组合来起到那个可持续的发展。好，简单的就是说一个，谢谢。
Thank you, my dear professor. Your lecture is really shocking to me. You know the wisdom of the ancient person, ancient people. But my question is, in a modern society, especially in the developing country, like China or other countries, the people, they want to have a very good life in a very short time. How can you make them to think about sustainable or to make such kind of systems?To maybe you can benefit your sons or some people, but for you now you are very poor. You want to have a very health and very wealth life. How can you handle such kind of conflict between the urgent profit? Now the people come focus on this. How can you handle this? Thank you.
Thank you. I think this is a fundamental question.Which led to the development of the new system, thinking with the interpretation that to meet the expectation of the modern society, these systems are not productive enough, and that's why they developed these new systems to provide enough productivity so that they support the new systems. And.Even in many countries, it's the same. If you go in Japan and read the newspapers in the 1960s, the newspapers are so critical if the government is delaying the construction of the dams. Why is delay development is short and so? Now if you go there, people are complaining they don't want any dams to be built. So the values actually change. And so that is one thing we understand also.And now if you go to Sri Lanka, there's very popular TV program which is looking at these ancient systems. And then people realize that a lot of cultural activities about the songs they had, the festivals they had, actually are very interesting. So they miss them. So they want to revive some of those things. So I think the most important part is thatProbably the most important part is to have more choices, not to remove some choices. To have different choices and not to make them so permanent because we cannot decide. A lot of good things depend on the values the society has at the time. And people may perceive economic or material wealth as a quick, more important object. But after some time, they may feel that it doesn't meet all the needs. And sometimes how they appreciate what we have is more important than trying to get what they think is important. So it's very much related, it's a very much a philosophical question as much as a need. And I think what is important is to try to meet both these needs in a way which is possible. Last year I was talking with the chief minister who is in charge of irrigation systems. Now, all these canals actually can produce electricity because they have the people and very small turbines which can work on less than 1 meter drop that could produce also what's negative energy. Secondly, a lot of people who work in the cities have this breakout system. They go out and work somewhere else.And what these systems offer is the landscape. The landscape is very beautiful. So you can actually combine some sort of internal ecotourism where people could come and work away from the cities. So maybe many different ways maybe it's possible to enhance the income of people. But more, as you say, probably they cannot meet all the needs that we need to understand. But what would be important is that some of the conclusions which we come have been reached before, like the sustainability assistance, and maybe we should not throw them out just thinking that they're not efficient. Maybe we need to investigate and also find out where to incorporate them, because these reservoir systems did not have the social progress which you see now. So I think the important lesson is that we probably, as you rightly said, we cannot depend entirely on these systems for the people. But the lesson that we have is that whatever we do should be part of the people's lives, and the need is very important. And if we disregard that and develop all these things as impersonal systems, the sustainability will be very small. And the resilience and efficiency are a little bit difficult to manage, because if you have resilience, you have to have sort of redundancy. And our present day systems are designed for efficiency, so we cannot have resilience. But what happens is that when we absorb a shock, we see the losses are so big that maybe it's worth to have some redundancy. And that means again it boils back to the value system. How we value, and if we don't give a value to this kind of social benefit, cultural value, then we cannot say that these systems can compete with the modern system. If you only look at how much rice is produced, then those systems cannot compete. So the two things, one is it should be part of our lives, second one is how we should change our value systems in one way, how we evaluate the services. And secondly, you also should think of that our society's perspectives are not going to be permanent. Within 2 years, they will change. And so we should not change too much just because current social thinking is not there. Okay.